There is this massive shift around the world to electric vehicles. Australia's uptake last year was under 2%.
Opposition Labor leader says other countries are leaving Australia behind. It's Thursday, November 11th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Amy Heibels in Washington. You'll also find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, what do UNHCR plans on Bangladeshi Island mean for Rohingya refugees? Can the U.S. infrastructure plan help clog ports? Coal in the crosshairs at Glasgow climate talks. An American mother reflects on son's sacrifice in Afghanistan. And science in a minute. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Australia's electric car industry has criticized the government's new policy to build thousands of charging stations as far too little too late. The Australian government has pledged $132 million to speed up the rollout of hydrogen refueling and electric charging stations. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports for VOA.
The Electric Vehicles Council says an Australian government plan to build electric vehicle charging stations and hydrogen-powered vehicle fueling stations doesn't include subsidies, tax incentives, or minimum fuel standards, and leaves Australia lagging the rest of the world. Transport accounts for one-fifth of Australia's emissions. Prime Minister Scott Morrison says electric and hydro-powered vehicles are key in efforts to decarbonise the economy. There's a plan to build 50,000 home charging stations and increase the government's fleet of electric vehicles. Morrison says it's a bold strategy.
Our plan, which is another key part of the overall national plan to achieve net zero emissions by 2050, this is one of the key building blocks. The future fuels and the take-up of electric vehicles driven by Australians' choices.
The government has forecast that electric and hybrid electric vehicles will make up about a third of annual new car and light truck sales by 2030. Sales hit a record of 8,688 in the first half of this year, but made up a fraction, about 1.5%, of total sales. During the 2019 election campaign, Morrison derided electric cars, insisting they would end the weekend because they wouldn't be able to tow trailers or boats to go camping. His stance has changed as environmental pressures grow on governments around the world. But critics say the Australian strategy lacks ambition and does nothing to improve affordability of electric cars, which are more expensive than gasoline or diesel models. Morrison insists that costs will come down as technologies improve. Opposition Labor leader Anthony Albanese says other countries are leaving Australia behind.
There is this massive shift around the world to electric vehicles. Australia's uptake last year was under 2%. In Norway, it was 70%. In the United Kingdom, it was 15% and rising. We're falling way behind.
Australia has some of the world's highest emissions per person and is a huge exporter of fossil fuels. Despite a pledge to achieve net zero carbon emissions by 2050, the Morrison government said its coal and gas industries would not be phased out. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
We invite you to read more on our top story by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook, VOA Asia, and the VOAnews.com website. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on VOAnews.com. Taliban claim capturing 600 Islamic State militants. Aid group says up to 5,000 Afghans fleeing daily to Iran. India hosts talks on Afghanistan, but Pakistan, China stay away. U.S. journalist Danny Fenster detained in Myanmar facing new charges of terrorism and sedition. Kishida re-elected Japan's prime minister in parliamentary vote. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and on the VOAnews.com website. VOA Asia continues. The United Nations Refugee Agency is set to begin aid operations in support of ethnic Rohingyas on a remote Bangladeshi island where more than 20,000 refugees have been relocated by the Bangladesh government. VOA Asia examines some of the issues refugees are grappling with on the island, described by some as unlivable. Rohingya refugees relocated to the Bay of Bengal island of Basan Char have complained of poor food and living conditions over the past year. The United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, or UNHCR, and the Bangladesh government have agreed to work together to support the refugees, but the arrangement has not been made public. Some Rohingya from the island say they welcome the UN agency on the island, hoping their lifestyle will improve and their kids will be able to get a good education. Another Rohingya on the island hopes other things will improve. Sometimes the police harass Rohingya refugees. If UNHCR is present here, the police will not be able to harass us, said a 36-year-old who does not want to be identified, fearing reprisal from police. Others say the island will remain unlivable even after the UNHCR starts its operations there. Rohingyas who are in Basan Char now have seen how the island sinks under the sea during high tide. Heavy rain and tsunami can drown the island completely, and all Rohingyas there will get killed, said a 36-year-old Rohingya man who fled Basan Char and returned to a mainland camp a few weeks ago in Cox's Bazar. He spoke to VOA on condition of anonymity for fear of being arrested and forcibly returned. Rights groups have often called Basan Char a prison island for refugees. They have urged the UNHCR and the government to publicly release details of the agreement so that others can monitor compliance with its terms. Rights groups have long argued the island, formed naturally by Himalayan silt, is vulnerable to natural disasters and is not suitable for human settlement. Many Rohingyas compare the Basan Char facility to a prison. Bangladesh has announced it has a plan to relocate 80,000 more refugees to Basan Char over the next few months. Phil Robertson, Deputy Director of Human Rights Watch's Asia Division, believes transparency is paramount.
UNHCR and the government of Bangladesh should publicly release their agreement so that everyone, most especially the Rohingya refugees themselves, can see what has been promised about the future situation on Basan Char. Without clarity on what the two sides have agreed on, it's hard to assess what the future holds for those stuck in Basan Char, who have so far faced separation from their families, lack of adequate food and medical services, no access to livelihoods, and physical abuses and torture by Bangladesh security personnel on the island.
Robertson adds that freedom of movement needs to be part of any agreement. Our thanks to Sheikh Azizur Rahman for contributing this story. Still ahead on VOA Asia, what does Biden's recently passed infrastructure package mean for clogged ports in the U.S.? Happening now in Asia, the Indonesian president and the Malaysian prime minister met in Jakarta Wednesday, where they decided to reopen the border for fully vaccinated travelers and highlighted the importance of resolving the crisis in Myanmar. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're happy you're with us on VOA Asia. The Biden administration is relying on infrastructure dollars to help fix the clogged ports and blanket the nation with internet access. But a series of initiatives rolled out on Tuesday show that the urgent pace might not be fast enough to address the immediate needs of an economy coping with a supply chain squeeze and a shift to remote work. U.S. President Joe Biden spoke with the CEOs of Walmart, Target, UPS, and FedEx on Tuesday about how to relieve the supply chain challenges, as ships are still waiting to dock at some of the country's leading ports. AP correspondent Tim McGuire has more on the infrastructure plan President Biden supported that was approved by the U.S. House of Representatives late Friday.
President Biden says the $1 trillion infrastructure plan will impact everyone in this country.
This legislation is going to change the lives of every American.
The president says the recently passed $1 trillion infrastructure bill will have an effect on nearly every aspect of daily life, especially when it comes to long-neglected transportation issues.
It's the most significant investment in passenger rail in the past 50 years, roads and bridges in the past 70 years, public transit ever.
Biden also notes that the measure contains billions to build out high-speed broadband internet across the country. It addresses the ports and shipping issues causing the current costly bottlenecks. Biden says he wants Democrats in Congress to act on his even more ambitious Build Back Better program.
There's no one else coming to do this work. It's up to us, our country, our planet, our democracy. They're all in our hands right now.
Tim McGuire, Washington.
Be sure to read and see more on this story at voanews.com. In other U.S. news, prices for U.S. consumers jumped 6.2% in October compared with a year earlier, as surging costs for food, gas, and housing left Americans grappling with the highest inflation rate since 1990. Inflation is eroding the strong gains in wages and salaries that have flowed to America's workers in recent months, creating political headaches for the Biden administration and congressional Democrats, and intensifying pressure on the Federal Reserve as it considers how fast to withdraw its efforts to boost the economy. Driving the price spikes are persistent supply shortages resulting from robust consumer demand and COVID-related factory shutdowns coming out of the pandemic recession. Ports across the world have become bottlenecked. America's employers facing labor shortages have also been offering pay increases, and many of them have raised prices to offset their higher labor costs, thereby contributing to inflation. The result has been accelerating prices for a broad range of consumer goods, from food and heating oil to paints, chemicals, and window blinds. After initially affecting mainly goods in pandemic-disrupted industries, surging inflation has broadened into the many services that Americans spend money on, notably for restaurant meals, rental apartments, and medical services, which jumped 0.5% in October.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see, with links to easily find them. VOA Asia Twitter, we're always online for you.
This news from VOA Asia. In Cambodia, an autistic teenager was released from prison on Wednesday as he vowed to continue to fight for patriots. The teen was jailed in June for writing messages deemed insulting to the government. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. People worldwide are enduring rising energy prices and energy shortages. For VOA, Jessica Stone reports from Washington on how this reality is affecting talks in Scotland on emission targets at this year's COP26.
Global fuel shortages are hitting consumer wallets with higher gasoline prices.
It actually is a really big problem because, I mean, gas prices are like about $4 now.
Meanwhile, the world's largest carbon emitter, China, is increasing coal production to provide heat this winter.
High energy prices only reinforce the urgent need to diversify sources, double down on clean energy development, and adapt promising new clean energy technologies.
But U.S. President Joe Biden's optimistic view at the United Nations climate talks in Glasgow has not been matched by significant cuts among major emitting nations. Neither China, India, nor Russia signed on to the U.S.-European Union pledge to reduce methane gas emissions by 30% by 2030.
I think a lot of people, including myself, are not very surprised.
Rena Tway of the Center for Global Sustainability at the University of Maryland says Beijing won't announce additional carbon cuts until it can meet its existing commitments. China is seeking self-sufficiency in renewables to maintain political stability, she says, noting that nearly half of its electricity production comes from coal.
Coal has come to an end energy system, but how to retire the existing large infrastructure is another challenge, because especially for a developing country like China, India, the coal fleet are much younger.
Like China, India is giving itself a longer ramp to transition away from fossil fuels, India's prime minister announced in Glasgow it is giving itself 50 years to achieve net zero emissions. The deadline is decades after that of many other countries. New Delhi argues it still has millions to lift out of poverty and has not polluted the planet for as long as the U.S. and Europe.
In the historical context, India is not a significant contributor. So its cumulative emissions stands at 3%.
Nilima Jain is an expert at India's energy sector at the Center for Strategic and International Studies.
It has been very vocal about not phasing out coal, and rightly so. Coal fuels two-thirds of India's power generation.
While developing nations remain wedded to coal, the pressure to develop reliable, affordable sources of renewable energy for all nations is only likely to increase going forward. Jessica Stone for VOA News, Washington.
Making headlines in Asia, China says Australia is solely responsible for the sour relations between the two nations. The statements from Beijing come after former Australian Prime Minister Paul Keating criticized Australia's diplomatic relations with China. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia. Veterans Day, which initially marked the armistice that ended World War I in 1918, is a federal holiday observed every November 11th, honoring U.S. military veterans for their service to the nation. This Veterans Day marks the first since the end of the war in Afghanistan, a conflict in which more than 750,000 U.S. forces served and more than 2,400 never returned home. VOA's Kane Farabaugh spoke with one mother who reflects on America's longest war and her son's sacrifice.
Denise Williams is a regular visitor to the Middle East Conflict's Memorial Wall along the banks of the Illinois River near Marseilles, Illinois.
This memorial represents those who have died since 1967 in all Middle East conflicts. People forget we lost three soldiers in the Yom Kippur War in 1967. The infamous Black Hawk Down. Mogadishu, they're here. USS Cole, they're here. So it's not just post-9/11 here. It's all Middle East conflicts.
But there is one name on these walls closest to William's heart, her sons, Andrew Meary.
This is not a legacy and a reminder of death to me. This is a reminder to the living that everything you have was purchased with these names, with these lives. It is something to remember. Something to honor, to appreciate.
Private First Class Andrew Meary was deployed with the Army's 101st Airborne Division in southern Afghanistan during the U.S. troop surge in 2010, when a suicide bomber on a motorcycle detonated a device near his outpost. One of the soldiers with Meary that day, Sergeant Felipe Pereira, later recalled the incident in a video produced by the U.S. Defense Department.
I run down the hill even further. That's when I got to PFC Meary, and, you know, the soldier just turns up to me, you know, Special Thorn just turns up to me and says, man, he's dead. He's gone.
Andrew Meary was just 21 years old when he was laid to rest on Veterans Day, November 11th, 2010, near his home in Illinois. His is now one of more than 2,400 names on these panels who died serving in the U.S. military in Afghanistan since 2001. Meary visited his mother on leave just weeks before he died. Williams says even then, he never wavered in his understanding of the mission to eliminate terrorist threats in the country.
He absolutely believed if we were not fighting them there, we would be fighting them here. He believed in what he was doing. He believed in the righteousness of it.
Williams views that objective in Afghanistan as a success. Osama bin Laden was captured and killed less than a year after her son's death.
Everything else that we did in Afghanistan, while there's many noble causes, and there's many noble ideas, that's not what a war is about. That's not what soldiers are for. Soldiers don't dig wells and build schools. And my son participated in some of that. That's not the purpose of soldiers.
Today, Williams represents Illinois Gold Star Mothers as the nonprofit service organization's president.
We are the mothers of those who have lost their child or children because of their decision to put on this nation's uniform.
As the United States marks the first November 11th Veterans Day after the end of the war in Afghanistan, a date which also marks exactly 11 years since she buried her son, Williams answers a difficult question she is often asked.
I get asked, well, was it worth it? There is no such thing as their child's death being worth it to a mother's heart, period. But my son didn't fight for the Afghan people. He did not fight for a political party. He did not fight for anything other than the Constitution, the oath that he swore. He fought for the American people, for America. America's worth fighting for.
Kane Fairbaugh, VOA News, Marseilles, Illinois.
Flags of Valor is a company that makes wooden American flags and provides employment to U.S. combat veterans. The company also raises money to support veteran assistance organizations. VOA's Deborah Block has the story.
Eric Wilson is cutting wood to be used for creating handcrafted wooden American flags at Flags of Valor in Winchester, Virginia. After serving in combat with the U.S. military in Iraq and Afghanistan, he says the American flag means a great deal to him.
Here in the U.S., we have the freedom to express whatever religion we want to practice, have freedom of speech, everything else. You have the freedom to express who you want to be, and that's how I see the American flag.
The craftsmen are veterans, including Jacob Young.
I fought for this flag.
Flags of Valor grew from a home project to a manufacturing company in 2015 that sells about 30,000 wooden flags of different sizes each year. Each one is a proud work of art by the veteran who puts their signature on it. Co-founder Brian Stortz, a former Army paratrooper and Air Force Special Operations pilot, began crafting the flags at home as he recuperated from an injury during a deployment in Afghanistan.
What I found was it was very therapeutic, you know, taking raw materials and painting and sanding and turning it into something beautiful, especially, you know, the symbol of our country, which is the American flag.
Later, along with Joe Seamus, another Air Force pilot, Flags of Valor was born.
I think what's made us successful was our devotion from the very beginning to being made in America, to employing veterans, and to giving back.
He says Flags of Valor was founded on philanthropy first and then profit. So far, the company has raised $1.5 million for veteran and first responder charities.
We do support charities that treat post-traumatic stress. We do support charities that support the families of the fallen. That's very important to us because oftentimes they're not getting all the support that they need.
Besides the typical red, white, and blue flag, there is also a black and white version.
That's the subdued flag. That's the black and white version that we sell that highlights those people that wore that flag in combat.
Stortz appreciates the patriotism and sacrifice of the veterans, who he says make great employees.
I think the unique thing about having combat veterans is that, you know, Joe and I are also combat veterans, so we understand how everyone thinks.
Wilson appreciates the camaraderie that makes him feel at home.
You have that fraternity feeling in the military. This is, you know, that brotherhood feeling.
Deborah Block, VOA News, Winchester, Virginia.
This is Science in a Minute.
Astronomers have spotted an accident. It's a brown dwarf located about 50 light years away. A brown dwarf was supposed to be a star, but was unable to gain enough mass to sustain the needed hydrogen fusion at its core to become a full-fledged star. The astronomers gave it its nickname because it was detected by accident and that it's not like any of the other brown dwarfs observed so far. A study published in the astrophysical journal Letters suggests the accident might be 10 billion to 13 billion years old, which is about double the average age of other known brown dwarfs. If it is that old, the astronomers say the accident could have formed early in our galaxy's history and have a different chemical makeup. If so, the scientists propose that there are probably many more of these ancient brown dwarfs nearby in the galaxy. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
And finally, in space news, NASA won't be putting astronauts back on the moon until at least 2025. Administrator Bill Nelson announced the news Tuesday. NASA had been aiming for 2024, a deadline set by the Trump administration. But Nelson says Congress did not provide enough money to develop a landing system for its Artemis moon program. In addition, he says a legal challenge by Jeff Bezos' rocket company stalled work for months on the lunar lander under development by SpaceX. Officials say technology for new spacesuits also needs to ramp up before astronauts can return to the moon. You have been listening to VOA Asia. Be sure to like us on Facebook, VOA Asia. Follow us on Twitter at VOA Asia. You can find us on Instagram and YouTube and at VOAnews.com. Thank you for joining us, and thanks to our service chief, Diane Gao. Our VOA Asia team includes Keith Lane, Chris Cascale, Jessica Stone, and Jim Stevenson. I'm Amy Heibels in Washington. Now go and make it a great day.